Okay, I think we'll get started. Welcome to this class on building writing skills. I'd like to start by reading a short story. I remember the moment precisely when the magic began. I was 8 and not very outstanding third grader in Mrs. Webb's class. I didn't care much for school. I never had. My world in those days was the broad, swampy creek that ran below our house. That and my beloved pets. School was something that got in the way of my enjoyment of these things. On one particular morning, my reading group had been sent back to our desks to do our seat work. On my desk, under my workbook, I had hidden a piece of paper, and instead of doing what I should have been doing, I sneaked the opportunity to write. At home, I had a dachshund, and I made him the hero of a rather lurid tale involving our old mother cat and a band of marauding, eye-plucking crows. So absorbed did I become in spinning this tale that I failed to notice Mrs. Webb on the move. And what inevitably happens to 8-year-old girls who do not do their reading workbook happened. Mrs. Webb snatched the story away from me, and I had to stay in from recess to do my work. A couple of weeks later, I was ill and kept out of school for a few days. When I returned, I had to stay after school that afternoon to make up some of the work I had missed. Mrs. Webb apparently took this opportunity to clean out the drawers of her desk. Anyway, when I had finished, she handed over a piece of paper. "Here, I think this is yours," she said. It was a story about my dog and the crows. Collecting my coat and belongings to go home, I began to read it as I walked down the school corridor. I pushed open the heavy double doors of the school and then sat down on the concrete steps at the entrance to finish reading. That precise moment I remember with such exquisite clarity. The feel of the cold concrete through my skirt, the late autumn sunshine transposed against the darkness of the school entranceway, the uncanny silence of the empty playground, even the faint anxiety of knowing that I should be on my way home because my grandmother would worry if I was too late. The paper, however, held me spellbound. It was all there, my dog, his adventures, the excitement. I felt just as excited by the story reading it as I had been writing it. Astonished when I realized this, I lowered the paper. Overwhelmed by a sense of insight. Wow. I had always written because I found writing like pretending, an opportunity to turn myself into someone else for the moment. I had never really gone back to what I had written. Now, here it was, 2 weeks later, and I was feeling exactly what I had experienced earlier when I was writing it. Exactly. Again. As if the 2 weeks hadn't happened. I had stopped time. There, on the school steps, I knew I had stumbled onto magic of the first order. So our first point, why write? Why should we write? Why is it essential that you make writing a regular activity for your students? And why are you shortchanging them if you don't? 4 points here. A, for better comprehension. In 2012, The Atlantic, which is a national magazine, published an award-winning article called The Writing Revolution. And I understand you can get that in a book today. It tells the story of the New Drop School in New York City that was one of the lowest performing high schools in the nation. The city officials signaled that school was in the crosshairs for closure. Various things had been tried to remedy the situation, but nothing had moved the dial. The principal began a detailed investigation into why the students were failing and came up with a singular answer: poor writing. She decided that if nothing else, these high school students would learn to write well. Teachers in nearly every academic subject were required to focus on the skills that underlie good analytical writing. Most of the teachers were strongly negative at first, but as students' scores began to climb, the belly aching became fainter, or grew fainter. Within a few years, the New Drop School, formerly the black sheep of the borough, was being held up as a model of successful school turnaround. Another story. A fourth and fifth grade teacher was concerned about her students' low achievement test scores. She began assigning them to write a paragraph a week on anything they wanted to write about. She did not grade them, but throughout the day, she would call the students one by one to her desk and go over their writing, praising what was good and showing them how to do better. This went on week after week. By the next achievement test, each student's score had improved at least one grade level, if not more. Writing demonstrates that learning has truly taken place, which brings us to our next point. B, why write? To reach a level of learning that impacts. And so we have these charts, all right, chart up here showing the levels of learning like floors in a house. At a knowledge level, the student can recall information in the form in which it was learned. He can fill in the blanks, he can match, he can spell. If he saw it, he can maybe hold it in that way. At a comprehension level, he understands the material well enough to tell you in his own words what he read about. At the application level, he is able to use his knowledge to solve a problem. And at the analysis level, he's able to take apart pieces of information, reorganize them, and draw his own conclusion. So on these first four levels, the student is working with already created material. First passively on the first two levels, and then actively, level 3 and 4. But when he reaches level 5, the synthesis, he's actually using his knowledge to produce new material. And this is where writing comes in. So what about it, teacher? Are you happy if your students are retaining? They can retain enough, they can retain information just long enough to regurgitate it onto the test. And wow, they got it. Or are you leading them to levels of learning that will make a real impact on their lives? The next point, C, why write? To develop writers for God and the church. Karl Marx, a communist leader, said, give me 26 soldiers and I can conquer the world. He knew the effectiveness of the printed word. And you may have heard the saying, the pen is mightier than the sword. Will any of your students be soldiers of God with a pen in hand? And today, in order to get them to pick up their swords, you might have to get them to lay down their phones. Think about it. Will your students leave school without the ability to write a meaningful graduation message? Will they avoid certain classes when they get to Bible school because they hear that that teacher has you write essays? Or will any of them, any of your students, become church leaders who don't know how to craft a well-worded, properly formatted letter to their congregations? Someone has said, a good idea, poorly expressed, may actually strike the reader as a poor idea. Will your students be a reproach to Christianity because of their poor communication skills? Can you afford to skip writing? And the last point, D, why write? To increase awareness. Not all of your students will grow up to write for publication or even for pleasure. But learning to write creatively in school will help them be more articulate and more observant, thus in increasing the quality of their lives. That brings us to our second main point, how shall I write? And it's always more effective when one speaks from experience. And my wife does a lot more writing than I do, so I'm going to have her tell us how to write.
Can you fix that whiteboard?
Actually, get a little bit more room in here.
Thank you. I wanted to set some things on here. Yeah, that'll probably work. Okay, how shall we write? Now, I have a story to read, too. This is from Handbook for Creative Teaching. English class, Sister Linda announces cheerily, today is Thursday, so it's time to write a composition again. The frowns and suppressed sighs bring her optimism down a notch. Today, let's write about what I like about visiting my grandparents. She neatly writes the topic on the chalkboard. I'm sure you'll enjoy writing about visiting your grandparents, so you may begin. The weary looks Robert and Lester exchange bring her optimism down another notch. Sister Linda sits at her desk, arranges a stack of math papers, and proceeds to check. Why don't my children like to write compositions? I'm supposed to teach them to write and give them plenty of practice, but today will be no different from other Thursdays. She surveys the room. Jeanette is staring at the chalkboard. Ruby is tracing around the staples in her tablet. Daniel is tying his shoe. At least Robert has his hand positioned to write, but Stephen is trying to balance his pencil on his finger. George's arm is propped, dangling limply in the air. Yes, George. The whole class may as well answer in unison, I don't know what to write. In another classroom, Brother Wilbur faces his pupils. When I was a boy, I always enjoyed visiting Grandfather. He lived by himself in a white house with two green wooden rocking chairs on his porch. I liked to sit on one of his rocking chairs and read, and often I'd watch the cars going by on the road. That doesn't sound like anything special, does it? But our house was far away from the road, so it seemed different to be so close. Galen is waving his arm. Our house is close to a busy road, and we think it's so nice to go to Grandfather's where it's quiet. You can hear all kinds of birds there, and spring peepers, and frogs. Norman is smiling. Ellen nods her head. Grandfather had a cherry tree in his yard, Brother Wilbur says. If we went to see him when the cherries were ready, he'd let us pick some. Raised hands indicate that more students have thoughts to share. What do you especially like about visiting your grandparents? Gerald. In my grandma's house, there's some blue glass above the one door. I think it's a transit or a transom or something, and it makes the hallway look blue. A small window above the door is a transom. Suzanne. When I was little, I always wanted my aunts to read to me. Brother Wilbur smiles. All of us have things we could tell about. Let's write about them now. Write about something our discussion has brought to your mind. Eager hands pull tablets and pencils from desk. Brother Wilbur slowly walks among the pupils. Lucy begins writing, Grandpa's cherry cedar. Ethel looks up and whispers, First I thought I'd write about the time my brother fell off a ladder, but now I decided to write about Grandmother's doll cradle. That will be interesting, Brother Wilbur assures her. Okay, can you tell me, why don't Sister Linda's pupils like to write? Do you have any ideas, as you hear these, visit these two classrooms, why don't Sister Linda's students like to write?
She hasn't shown them how.
Exactly. She hasn't showed them how. She just gave them a cold topic. And what did Brother Wilbur do? He warmed it up. He warmed it up through discussion and sharing memories. And I guess your answer also plays into the next one. She just told them what to do, and he showed them. And what were a couple of other differences? She wasn't really that enthused about her topic. You can see she tried to be cheerful. She wanted to pump a little cheerfulness into them, but you could tell that Brother Wilbur enjoyed his topic. He had good memories of his grandparents, and it showed, or his grandpa, I guess. And there's one more difference. Did you pick up on that? How did they conduct the rest of the writing class? One big difference. Are you thinking of it?
He stuck with them.
She sat at her desk and checked papers. In the handbook, Christian School Builder, there's a series of articles on teaching composition and writing by Stephen Mast. He says, in order for you to inspire within your students an interest in writing, you must be involved. Writing class is not a period to occupy the students so you can check papers. If anyone works in writing class, it is you, the teacher. Before we talk about the writing process, a word to the wise. One, know your goals, know where you're going. Harry Wong said the three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, and preparation. So what do you want to accomplish in this class? If you know where you're going, that'll inspire your enthusiasm. It'll help you make the most of premium class time. The second thing is be a good salesman, again, in these articles. He says, in writing class, you are a salesman. A good salesman does not set out his wares on your kitchen table and then sit down with a nod and relax while you peruse his products. Oh no, he is a bundle of energy. He pulls out bottles of this and little samples of that and puts them together in the most intriguing way. He uses little contraptions you never saw before and talks a mile a minute and shows you all you wish to know out of little pamphlets pulled from his amazing briefcase. So be a good salesman and sometimes do the assignment yourself. Is it hard to picture yourself behaving like a salesman? Well, maybe the third one would be a little easier. Just give yourself permission to have fun. And I'm not talking about scheduling more February fun days exactly. I'm talking about just infusing the daily learning routines with a healthy dose of delight. We have a teacher-writer friend. She's an excellent writer, but she says she did not enjoy writing in school. The teacher majored on the technicalities, and they spent so much time rewriting, sweating over commas and spellings and paragraph switching that she left school and she didn't write much for a while. It seemed too complicated, too tedious, until she says she discovered writer's workshops by mail and the joy of words again. And so she says, when I started teaching, I wanted my students to discover the joy of word spinning and the wonder of invention. So we played with words a lot. And one thing they did that isn't exactly writing, but it sounds fun, she challenged her students to look for unfamiliar words in the dictionary. If I could define the word, I got a point. If I didn't know it, the class got a point. And they pore over the fat classroom Websters hunting for obscure words. Sometimes they'd build word strings, also known as word prospecting. Sometimes they played with sentences, swapping generic nouns and verbs for more specific ones, word spinning. It's true discipline and order are important for structure and stability, but it's the joy and interest and fun that wins their hearts and draws them in. So also give yourself permission not to grade everything. You don't have to grade everything they write. This book, this is a new one put out by Christine Light. It's called Sparkling Bits of Writing. And it's full of good little writing exercises, excerpts from good children's literature, and every so often there is what's called a gold piece. That's the one you can grade. In the back, there's a chart to help you know how to grade it. That's the one they might spend time revising and rewriting for a grade. The rest of the time, they're just building their skills and having fun. So I recommend this book. It's a good investment. And the fourth thing to remember is make it accessible. The truth to be taught must be learned through truth already known. That's the fourth law of teaching. You'll need to meet them where they are. And sometimes you might need to give them a pattern or a formula, or I call it a scaffold sometimes. You know, a scaffold holds things up. So, for example, if they're learning to write dialogue, here we have a dialogue. What's the subject of the dialogue? Tina wants to wear only a sweater to school, and Mom thinks it's too cold. So you could put their scaffold, their pattern, something for them to look at, rather than just telling them, now you must indent every line, and you must switch paragraphs every time the speaker changes, and you must put quotation marks around everything that is said, and so on. They can just look at the pattern and follow that the first time. When they get used to writing dialogue, then it becomes easier. You can take the scaffold away, and they'll be able to do it. So I'll just explain this a little bit. So here's a possible dialogue. Tina, Mom said, I don't think that sweater you're wearing is warm enough for school today. And one thing about writing dialogue is you don't always have to say, he said, she said, he said, she said. Sometimes you can give the speaker an action, and that will tell you who is talking. So maybe Tina will simply look down over herself, and then she'll say, this sweater, it's warm enough for me. And then Mom starts talking, but it's snowing today. Again, Mom maybe has an action. Mom shook her head. That'll tell you that it's Mom talking. You are just getting over your cough. Please, Mom, Tina. And when you put it in parentheses, that might mean you could search for another verb. Instead of just said, begged. Please, Mom, Tina begged. I don't want to wear a coat and scarf and on and so on. So that's an example of a scaffold, making it accessible by giving them a pattern. Another thing is possibly when the assignment is write a summarizing sentence for this paragraph. Tell them to answer the question, when and who and what and where and how. And then if you string those answers together, you will have your summarizing sentence. Can you all see this? For example, and often summarizing sentences should start with the when and not the who. So for example, during the Middle Ages, the Crusades changed Europe. Where, okay, not applicable because it says Europe here. And how? Drastically. If you put those together, then you will have your summarizing sentence. That gives them a pattern to follow. So that's an example of making it accessible. Make it accessible by breaking it down into small steps. Maybe have mini lessons sometimes. Maybe just do that. Write a dialogue. That's it. Or maybe I'll give you a paragraph here. You help me find and replace all the be verbs. You know, one thing of good writing is action verbs. So let's see if we can find and change all the be verbs. Mini lessons. Warm it up. Now you have math speed drills. You have music warm-ups. And why not have writing warm-ups to get their mind stretching and reaching out in different ways? This would go back to what I said about my friend who likes to just spin with words. So the other time we did this topic, I had made this writing warm-ups chart, so I decided, why not use it again? So you're going to be my class, and we're going to do a little word spinning. You can make it a little more visual by making a color dye, just out of salt dough or something. And you could give it to Billy, who has trouble keeping his hands to himself, and say, would you toss it for me? And let's suppose it comes up green. So this now you have Billy's attention. Let's see, there's one I want. Oh, yeah. Okay. So it says, how many ways can you use a yard of string? And so for a minute, write as many ways as you can think of to use a yard of string. And James, if you would just time for a minute. Do you have something? Okay. Do you all have something to write with? Tell them when to go.
Get ready. Get set. Go. And stop.
Did anyone get 10? Did anyone get 5? Anyone get 7? More than 7? Can you read yours?
Tag is laser shoes from the plant and not string of fish. Have room, make a bracelet, write a word, and
it. Okay. Did I don't know if you heard all those or not. Did anyone think of something different?
Start a fire.
Okay. Any more? Does he have one? What could you do with a yard of string? To tie someone up. Oh my word. You're right, you could. Like if you're playing cops and robbers or something. Okay, think what that would do for Billy if he thinks of an idea no one else does. You might have his support the rest of the day. Another way to do writing warm-ups is to do word clusters, like start with a center word, five things that make you think of summer. Then you could take each of those words and make a cluster, and so on. It's really fun to see what they come up with. Another great warm-up tool is the journal. I had one here. Oh, I think this is the perfect size. And for 5 minutes, you turn to the first blank page, write the topic at the top, and set the timer, use a teacher, participate, write for 5 minutes. And the goal is to just keep your pencil moving, not focusing on penmanship or grammar or perfect logic, just get their mental juices flowing. You could describe your relatives, you could describe your pets, you could describe your favorite foods. Your imagination is the limit. And I guess if you don't have an imagination, then ask one of your friends who does. Because I really like that idea, even though I didn't personally use it in school. I think I would do that now. And then now the writing process has five steps: exploring, drafting, revising, editing, and presenting. So this kind of word spinning that we were doing is a little bit like exploring, but exploring is more than that. It's kind of like research and planning, discussion, like Brother Wilbur and his students did. Discussing ideas with scope for the imagination, such as on your way to school this morning, you saw a bicycle wheel lying beside the road. How do you think it got there? Ask questions, discuss ideas, get their minds rolling, talk about a picture. Okay, you could ask them, what is happening in this picture? Why do you think the boy looks that way? What do you think might have happened? What do you think he's saying? When you do more analytical writing, that exploring also includes putting your ideas in order, a logical order. With the older students, they could develop a rough outline. Pictures are a must for creative writing classes. Younger children can simply write about what they see, and older children can write a story based on the picture. So Norman Rockwell pictures are just bursting with stories. And you can take them out of calendars. You can find them in old books. I was really fascinated by this puzzle that I found for a doll at one time. And I thought, you know, if I was a teacher, I think I would give each student a window to write about. Who lives behind these windows? And yeah, I don't know if it sparks your imagination like it does me. Some of the windows are closed, so is there an old lady that lives there? Is there a fat man with diabetes? Is there a poor? Is the person poor, or are they maybe a miser that, you know, just sitting on their money? Or do they have cats? Do they, you could talk about it for a while and then just let them go. Anyway, I just thought that would be really fun. It was fun putting it together anyway. I have some more pictures here that I just pulled out just for ideas. This is a man who's taking Bibles to a remote village. His motorcycle bogged down, it looks like. These children just got Bibles. Let's see. Oh, this is kind of a tough one. You might have seen this one, Define Necessity. This is maybe for mature people, can handle more mature themes, but, you know, what is necessity? This is good for a Black Friday sale. This is a starving child. So pictures. Start collecting pictures for your upcoming classes. And then the next step after you've explored your topic is to draft it. Okay, find a tablet this size and this color. There's something I read somewhere, something about white just seems to make them think it has to be perfect. It's easier to just let your writing flow when you have a yellow piece of paper, but I prefer this size, of course. Write in pencil. Tell them to write in pencil every other line. And again, don't focus on spelling, punctuation, or sentence structure. After they've explored and the ideas are ready to come out, let the ideas just come out on the paper. And after their first draft is written, they might want to give it some time to cool down, maybe hand it in to you to look at. And then they need to be taught how to revise. And this is something that children need to be taught, because, of course, they are going to think they have already written their best. So why do I have to revise it? But you'll have to teach them to stand back, look at their work, and ask questions. Have I said what I wanted to say? Are the happenings in the right order? Could I use a more interesting verb? You might need to ask them, okay, if they're writing a story, especially, what is a conflict? Every good story has a conflict, a problem to solve in one way or another. And does the story have consistent point of view? You know, you don't want to be jumping around between thinking from the viewpoint of this person and then from that person and then... But not every piece of writing is going to be a story. But you could tell them to ask questions. They still might not do that. So maybe you'll have to, as much as possible, maybe one-on-one, especially if they're just beginning to learn how to do this. It does take some time. You could ask them, you could say, okay, I was a little confused at this spot. Could you make it a little more clear? Or do you think this sentence here fits the theme of your story? Maybe you could just take that out. Or right here, what about in this section here? You could maybe have the characters talk to each other and in that way show what's happening, not just tell what happened. Things like that. You're going to, I think, at first especially, because revising is a hard concept and they'll need lots of help, but they can learn to do it. And I know when Melody was teaching school in Missouri, we went to visit her and she said, I want you to have a writing class with my third graders. So we went off to the mechanical room and we wrote this story, and I kind of followed these steps. I had them draft their story, and then we talked about how they could revise it and then rewrite it. And it's just kind of fun to watch your story come together and improve and grow. And the one little girl especially, she just really seemed like she really took to that. And Melody said then later she'd bring her piece of writing and say, would you help me edit this? So that kind of warmed my heart. I'd like to think that's a tool she took with her through school. And then the fourth step in the writing process would be to edit and polish, which is just looking it over for spelling, punctuation, things like that. Try to keep it from feeling too much like work. Just keep it upbeat. They don't have to revise everything they write. Remember that. But it is important they learn how. And then the fifth thing is to present it. And don't neglect that. Don't just write good and give it back to them. Stick in their desk. No. Read it to the class. Read it to other classes. Put it on the wall or the bulletin board. Publish it in the school newspaper. There's publications that accept children's writings. You could make a book out of it. I just really like this idea, too. I think maybe I would do it for art class, and then they could put their story in this little book. So, and they could illustrate it, too. So there you'd have an art class. You know, that would take care of a few art classes for you, too. And the fifth thing, or the fifth main point, is what shall we write? Now, since topics can be found everywhere, I think the best thing is to encourage you to search them out and find what inspires you. Because the best topic can fall flat without your enthusiasm. But once you own it yourself and it fascinates you, then you'll be ready to teach it. So I already showed you the book, Spark and Bit, and this is another one that has many, many good ideas. So that's another good investment. Okay. I'm going to just read you this little story yet, and then I'm going to turn it over to James again. Like I said, it can be very rewarding to see what children come up with. And this is a story written by a boy. When I had fifth and sixth grade, we did some creative writing exercises. We had a lesson on creating comparisons, similes and metaphors. And this one student, school was a struggle for him. He was 14 years old and he was still in the sixth grade and he could not spell. But he loved basketball and he wrote this little essay full of comparisons, similes, and metaphors. We walked into the basketball court like soldiers ready to win the fight. When the game started, we had the ball and drove like mad bulls to the hoop. The ball went in like a rabbit going down its hole. Then the other team had it and we guarded like a cow guarding its calf. They shot, but the ball went wild and went out of bounds. Then it was our turn to have the ball, but this time we took it easy and passed more. All this time we kept our eyes on the hoop like an eagle on a mouse. Finally, a teammate leaped into the air like a frog after a fly and took aim and shot the ball like a hunter shooting a gun. The ball fell through the hoop with a wonderful plop, like a rock being dropped into the water. This was the winning basket. Everyone cheered, just like the angels cheer in heaven when a sinner is saved. So. Okay, I'm going to gather up my stuff here, and I'm going to flip a few more of those writing warm-ups over so you can take a look at those, but I'll turn it over to James.
And I had a feeling I was going to forget that little story that I shared in the introduction was from the book One Child by Tori Hayden. So when shall we write? Maybe you feel like, I have to teach math, I have to teach English, my hands are full. How am I going to fit any writing in? But you should write every day. Small and frequent is most effective. And I'd like to share the idea that you can write across curriculum. In other words, even if it is math period, the students are going to be tickled if you get up and say, you can skip all the story problems today, but I just want you to write two of them. You make up two story problems yourself using the concept of the math that we're studying today. And you might have to help them the first one, and then they can do the second one, or whatever it takes. But that is writing practice in math. English, I know how it is. You know, part A, it's pretty easy. Part B, maybe underline the right. But usually that last part, you know, you got to write your sentences, and they have all these lines. And it's tempting for the teacher to say you can skip that last part. You might be popular for today, but what about tomorrow? As a teacher with vision, you know better than just skipping all that sentence. Maybe it's okay to have two instead of filling the whole, all of the lines. In reading, when it's time for them to do their reading, and some of the books might have these activities built in, but have them choose and read examples of good writing from the story and ask, why do you like that? So what part of the story do you like? And they like this little part. Well, what do you like about that? And get them to think about how it's written that makes it jump out at them or makes it interesting for them, and they can learn from other people's writing. In history, a lot of people think it's dry, but you could have your students write a diary entry from the perspective of a person in history. For example, they might have been a 13-year-old boy on Christopher Columbus's voyage, and they are just writing in their diary that evening what happened during the day. But it's part of what they're supposed to be learning about, and it could be interesting to share some of those. Science, you're looking through that microscope, looking at whatever it is, and just have them go back to their seats, or maybe even while they're doing it, look again and make some notes and write about what they're seeing. In Bible class, you could have them write the story before the story, such as the little boy that shared his lunch with Jesus. What happened in that little boy's life that morning before he left home? Or you could write, if I would have been there, if I would have been there when they threw Daniel in the lion's den. I saw it all happen. I was right there. I even saw the lions. And they can write about this Bible story. Spelling words. Spelling words can be put into a story. And you can boost a child from a speller to a writer. They can take those 20 spelling words and put them into a story. You can maybe even skip the spelling lesson this week, as long as you take those 20 words and put them in a story. They're getting the practice of spelling the word. They're getting the practice of making sure what it means. They have to know what it means if they're going to use it. And they're getting some writing practice. And read them back to the class, and at least some of them. In music, how can you incorporate writing into music? You can set poems to a familiar tune. Okay, enough on cross-curriculum. Complete sentences. And there again, it's tempting for teachers to just let the students to just write the short answer, you know. If they got it right, they must have understood what they were reading. It's not all the same. If they actually have to put it in their own words, if they have to make a complete sentence. And there again, you have to use your judgment. Maybe you could just have them do the last two. I want two answers in complete sentences. Or you could take it further than that. You could specify number 7 should begin with a subjective pronoun because. When you're answering number 7, I want your answer to start with a subjective pronoun, because. Or number 8, you give them directions. I want to see a compound verb in your answer for number 8 today. You can have a classroom journal and update the journal. That can be part of their work chart. If you have a work chart, somebody's busy sweeping the floor, somebody's cleaning the bathroom, one of them is doing that little journal entry. And there again, read them. Make it a part of your class. Weekly paragraph writing. Cindy Culp told my wife that in the school where she taught, there were two things that were part of the school culture. One, everyone would do math speed drills every morning. And number 2, all the students from 6th grade and older would turn in a 50-word paragraph every Monday morning. The paragraph was not graded, and it could be on any subject that the student chose, but it had to be done. And just think what it would do for you if you knew that every week you had to write a paragraph about something. Okay, I'm sure you have ideas. It'd be interesting to hear from you. But I see it's ready 4:00. The last point we have is who shall we follow? Expose them to excellent writing. Make sure your students hear good writing. Memory work. Memorize wonderful words of scripture, beautiful poetry, and post weekly quotes up on your board or somewhere where you share them and they get to learn from them. Read great books. If you're not a bookworm yourself, consult someone who is. Make sure you have good books for story time. Honey for a Child's Heart or Books Children Love would give you some suggestions. But there's no excuse for reading mediocre storybooks at story time. In conclusion, this is from On Teaching Writing. You may live to see some of your students publish articles, poems, stories, or books. You will feel rewarded knowing that your teaching has accomplished something toward their development as writers. However, in spite of your effort, not all of your students will come to love writing. But you will have done something for them. All through life, they will need to think and speak logically. Writing has helped them learn to do that and express themselves more clearly. Still, other students, though unpublished, will use writing as they never would have otherwise. They will write interesting letters, think and live creatively, and explore their feelings through journaling. Your teaching helped them, too. They all will have happy memories of the time they spent writing, and they all will be blessed because of you. Because you cared enough to help them explore themselves and their world. And that's the end of that quote. And I'll just say, and perhaps because of you, some of them may be able to say, I remember the moment the magic began. Thank you for your attention.